Hi, welcome to Prague Will Find a Way, your friendly neighborhood podcast all about progressive rock. I'm Jay Valade.
And I'm Jonathan Block.
So today, after a couple episodes ago, we did an episode about King Crimson's Beat project. I don't know if you can call it King Crimson's Beat project, but the Beat project featuring the members of King Crimson and Danny Carey and Steve Vai. And we talked a lot about Frank Zappa in that, so we figured we'd do a Frank Zappa episode.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Prague, is it Prague? Definitely at moments, and of the time in the 70s, he was as Prague as you kind of could get, kind of beyond that. Let's face it, Prague as English Prague is different than, you know, American Prague. We've never really touched on American Prague yet. We will, as a not the derivative bands, which there were some, but, you know, in our big tent definition,
right,
there's definitely some American people doing some wild, wacky stuff.
And Frank Zappa certainly falls under that umbrella.
Right.
He's almost a force unto himself.
He is, and I mean, you know,
I don't think you can categorize.
You really can't. He has so much music. Had so much music. I mean, you know, he died as 93. He was only 52.
Wow.
It's kind of hard to imagine, you know, we're 60. And, you know, certainly the amount he accomplished. And you know, you see interviews with him, like, he was no fool. He knew, like, he's like, you know, I would never get signed now in his later career. And but he was always pushing forward. And, you know, in preparation for this, we both watched the Zappa movie, which came out a couple of years ago.
Yeah. And, very enlightening. John is a much bigger Zappa fan than I am.
Yeah.
I've
particularly, my favorite Zappa era is the post-original Mothers. I know everybody talks about the Mothers and stuff. It was innovative. But I'm kind of at 69 Hot Rats through probably 75. What started to kind of turn me off was the increasing, and it's funny to say this because when he had Flo and Eddie, the Turtle Guys, in the early 70s, it was pretty dirty. But the music was just so intense that I overlooked that. By the time, and it's even like, I don't listen to the Adrian Belew was with Zappa for a couple of tours. That whole, it started then. It was just this overt, juvenile, toilet sexist humor. I don't know. I mean, epitomized by Chic Your Booty and the whole late 70s stuff. Musically, it was great, and there was always huge kind of music things in there, but that stuff kind of turned me off. I came back on around when Steve Vai came, and it became more of the Zappa and the backing band, as opposed to, like I shared with Jay, a number of things from 73 and 74 where they're all up there. It's all it's all very, very interactive. But the 81, 82 tours, and then I saw him in 84 as well, all good stuff. But we're getting ahead of ourselves because the movie does kind of chronologically go through. It's only 2 hours, so they do gloss over a bit. But what'd you think?
I thought it was great. And I think I kind of share some of your thoughts on the lyrical content, but I think that kind of is part of the deal, right? He was everything that he did. He just, that was him,
right?
He was like, I'm a composer. I'm gonna do this stuff, but I'm just gonna throw these shock lyrics on top of them, and this is what I want to do.
Well,
I don't want to have a hit single. I don't want to have this. I don't want to have that. I just want to make this music. And if throwing this stuff on top of it, which is what I want to do, is what I want to do, who cares?
Well, and he also talks about it in the movie because there's the, you know, the movie kind of goes deep into the beginning, his upbringing, so, which is interesting too, because no one's ever really talked a lot about that. And then it gets into the Mothers, which everybody talks about, kind of glosses over a lot, you know, does talk about the Roxy Band in 73 and stuff. And Ruth Underwood figures heavily into the movie, which is great. But, you know, he says later on, and they get a lot into his classical stuff and his other stuff. And he's like, well, you know, Valley Girl, you know, enables me to do this other stuff.
Right.
Yeah. But the humor was always, you know,
That was him.
That was Zappa. He was. Yeah. He was everywhere. I mean, I gravitate, and because we're Prague, is the mid-70s stuff is so Prague. I mean, if you think about the people whose really careers he launched, I mean, Jean-Luc Ponty, that was his first big thing. George Duke, who stayed with Zappa for like 5 years. You know, Ruth Underwood, Chester Thompson. I mean, you know, you watch some of those 74 videos where it's Chester and Ruth Underwood and George Duke and Napoleon Murphy Brown. It's just, it's insane. The music is absolutely insane.
But then you throw the lyrical content on the top and it kind of knocks it down a peg or two.
Right. Like I shared, there's the videos from 74, Token of My Extreme. It's one, it's like a show that they videotaped. And I share Florentine Pogan because there's not a lot of videos out there. But it's like, that the lyrics are all over the place, but it's like every single verse is a completely different musical thing, and you sit there and you're like, and it's enlightening too, because Chester Thompson has such a style, and he didn't change it at all when he played with Genesis, and actually he brought some of that
to them.
Those famous drum fills are they're from him, and it's just mind blowing music. Yeah, I mean, you sit there and you're like, they're kind of going crazy at points, too. That never really ended, right? I mean, and actually, I always found it interesting, you know, because after that, he gets Adrian Belew. And Adrian Belew can't read music. That's been the one. Usually, he takes people that you got to be able to read music to do his kind of stuff. And I was just surprised that Adrian, you know, and Adrian hung around for a while. There's not a lot of video of Adrian out there, but City of Tiny Lights would be the one video where he sings and he's playing. And it's just so interesting to see him. And then you go to like 6 months later and he's with Bowie, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just wild.
I think the Zappa band was a springboard for a lot of people, right?
It really was. And it was the kind of thing where, you know, Zappa was going to tour and then he would be like, okay, we're going to be off for 4 months. Some bands he would pay them just to keep around. But it was like, you know, Adrian Belew ended up going with Bowie for a tour. But then Zappa decided, I wasn't going to stop. And you know, Belew's already committed now to Bowie. And apparently Zappa never had an issue with stuff like that. He got it. His wife, who was his manager, did. That's if you watch some interviews with Adrian where he talks about his Zappa years, he talks a little about that.
But at the same time, in the movie, they did talk about how the Mothers were like a band were a band and whatever. And then all of a sudden there came this point that Frank wanted to do more kind of cherry picking who he wanted on what song or whatever, and the band kind of turned
because he was paying the band. I mean, even though it was Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention, it was really the Frank. I mean, Frank was bankrolling everything, and I think, you know, after a while it was like, I don't want to do this. I mean, there's certain points in his career where things happen and he had to change, and they actually did go over it in the movie where last night of the tour of 1971, and they've released it on the box set. They encored at the Rainbow Theater with, I think it was I Want to Hold Your Hand, believe it or not, the Beatles tune. Halfway through, some guy comes up on stage because he thought Frank Zappa was making eyes at his girlfriend and pushed him off the stage.
Yeah.
And, you know, he broke both legs, very serious. And that guy didn't really make it far out of the thing because, you know, people were ticked off about that. But that led then to his more progressive stuff. That's when and they kind of glossed over some of this. Like him walking around or being in a wheelchair. He did more big band, Grand Wazoo, Waka Jawaka, all these big jazzy more things that became. And, well, and actually in 72, 73, Mahavishnu Orchestra opened for Zappa. And that cross-pollination, because Jean-Luc Ponty ended up playing with Mahavishnu Orchestra, Ralph Humphrey, who was one of the drummers at the time, before Chester, and then it was Chester and Ralph Humphrey. And then Eddie Jobson played with Zappa in 1976, 75, 76. He's on a couple of albums.
tour or just
tour? Oh yeah, yeah. Okay. Live in New York, which is now a box set, has Eddie Jobson on it.
So this is a post Roxy
pre UK. Well, and then of course Terry Bozzio.
Yeah.
Who went, and that I gotta admit, that's the titties and beer and the Punky's Whips and that whole 76,
wow,
77.
We are going to have to edit this.
Yeah. It's just not, that stuff just doesn't do, and that's all revolves around Terry Bozzio,
yeah,
who then, of course, did UK and then did
Missing Persons
with
his
wife and Warren Cucurello, who was also a guitarist for Zappa.
Yeah.
So the cross-pollination is, but if you're not familiar with Zappa, I would just say listen to anything from like 73, 74, Overnight Sensation, Apostrophe, or One Size Fits All. And now there's box sets where there's live stuff. So Overnight Sensation, there's two live shows. You get some Jean-Luc Ponty, George Duke over everything.
It's kind of daunting.
There's so much stuff. I mean, it's hard to get into Zappa like now. Like, where do you start?
Right.
You know?
So I had like... truth be told, I had like a greatest hits, the Strictly commercial greatest hits, and
I'm
so
right,
that's how I knew Zappa,
yeah.
And you know, and that's where it was kind of like, you know, some of the lyrical content is not really my bag,
right.
And it's kind of funny, but then when you strip that away, the music is fantastic. So it's one of those weird juxtapositions. Is this crazy music with these kind of juvenile funny lyrics.
Although you
eating
know,
yellow
get,
snow and
yeah.
the Muffin Man and
right,
whatever,
yeah,
and it's
yeah,
like
yeah.
you know, okay,
yeah,
can I take this seriously?
Right.
And you can,
yeah,
but you have to be able to compartmentalize those.
Well, you have to, and then you know, there's so
and
much.
But then I start streaming. I'm like, I'm just gonna start streaming, and then some of the songs that were coming out, I'm like, what the? I don't know. I don't even know the titles.
A lot of the stuff, like I said, from Shakir Booty and Joe's Garage Volumes 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
There's great music in there, but also stuff that just, you know,
But even just
some
of the fun stuff that was going,
yeah.
Some of it is really
yeah.
fun.
I mean,
Joe's Garage, the song
yeah,
itself
he's
is
clever.
Fantastic.
He's very clever. And then, I mean, you can also get into Zappa and just listen to the instrumental stuff, right? Like,
right.
you know, I mean, I remember when Shut Up and Play Your Guitar came out, and it was just, you know, they would advertise it in Guitar Player. It was like three albums, and... the couple of videos I sent you from like the 81 tour where it's just instrumentals, and it's like, oh my God, I mean, it just blows your mind to see these people, and they're playing it live, like the Black Page, which is always number two, which is always notoriously, and that shows up everywhere. I mean, in the movie, Ruth Underwood's playing it on piano, which is very cool. And then, you know, you've got the band in 81, which is just amazing, and you Ed Mann on the vibraphone, and it hurts your head. But they're all, and then you look at the videos too, and it's like, the guys are playing on the keyboard too. They're all playing, you know, and the Chad Wackerman drummer who ended up playing a lot with Alan Holdsworth. And it's funny. There's one interview with Zappa where they're asking him, like, you know, do you listen to guitar players today? And who? This was probably like 83 or 84. Yeah. And he's like, the only guitar player that I listen to and enjoy is Alan Holdsworth.
Wow.
Yeah. So well, every you know he always
I mean
got,
he's
he
the
was,
guitar players.
Guitar player. So, but yeah, there's a lot of great, you know, even if you're like, oh, Zappa and all that juvenile, there's so much great instrumental music, and now it's all out there. That's the thing. Full
shows.
Well,
the funny thing is, if you watch this movie, it shows Frank in his basement
in the
or whatever.
Archive.
And his archive is just everything he's ever done.
And every show.
Every show. I mean, every time he's in the studio, they just let the tape roll, apparently. And it's like, oh, yeah, this is when whoever came over and we just were jamming.
Yep. And I mean, if anybody,
not a great jam, but
yeah,
I got it. There it is over there.
Yeah, I mean, if everybody and he asked me in this day and age, because the whole thing was put out is the Roxy from 73. To me, that was the pinnacle. And they put it all out. It was four shows over 2 days. Then there's a show the day before that was a video shoot. Then there's studio stuff. So it's like a 5 or 6 disc set. It's the complete Roxy. You can stream it. It's just, you know, Chester Thompson, the whole George Duke. It's just
so enlighten me on his his touring kind of thing. Was it same set lists or different set lists every night, or was it
was it
improv around the set list?
Yeah, they would mix it up, certainly more in the early days. But you know, when you look at his touring, it's all over the map, because you had the Mothers, then that was over, and then he might do a short tour after that with like five people for a few months. I mean, you know, again, in the 70s, people were on the road all the time, and then there's the Flo and Eddie, the Turtles yes. era. And, you know, they're playing all the time. He's also writing all the time. So songs are changing within the set. But like 6 months later, there'd be like two, you know, 30-minute tunes. You know, it was like stuff was just coming out of thin air. And then he gets pushed off the stage. Then he comes back out with like a 30-plus piece band playing his more jazz rock stuff. Yeah. And then that's not economically feasible. So then the next tour, it's 10 people with horns.
Yeah.
And then it becomes the famous, the I'll call it the Roxy era with George Duke and Ruth Underwood. And the set lists are changing a little, but starting to change less and less. But, you know, every night they might take one song out, put different, because then they talk about it in the movie too, that, you know, they wouldn't know what they were going to play. And Steve Vai talks a lot about this too.
Frank until would start playing and just look over at him and be like, aren't you playing it yet?
Yeah, well, it's like you had to, particularly like from 81, the 81, 82 in the late 70s, it's like Steve Vai says, you know, we have to know 80 songs, because he could call up anything, right? He could call up anything. And, you know, in those later, once it gets to the 80s, he's like I said, it's Frank Zappa and the band. He's got guitars. He's got Steve Vai playing all the difficult parts. He doesn't need to do that anymore. He picks the guitar up in solos. So, but as it got later on, I think the sets kind of stayed the same.
Solidified a little more.
A little more. But again, they had to know stuff at the drop of a hat. I mean, that's the other enlightening thing about the video, is they do talk at length about people, and you understand his operating procedure, which, again, amazes me about Adrian Belew, because Steve Vai talks about, you know, somebody made a mistake, or they're gone, you know? And that wasn't what Adrian Belew was doing. Like, he saw something in Belew that he wanted that.
Yeah.
And
well, and maybe it is that.
Yeah.
That X factor.
It is that X factor. You know. But yeah, you know, you get these people coming in and out, and you really don't think about it, right? Like, people don't think about Jean-Luc Ponty playing with Zappa.
And I had no idea that he did until I saw the documentary.
Right, yeah. And then there's a show from Stockholm in 73 that he's on. You know, it's a weird front line. It's Frank, Ruth Underwood, Jean-Luc Ponty on violin, Ian Underwood on bass clarinet, and I think Walt Fowler on trombone. That's the front line. It's so, and George Duke. Let's not forget George Duke and Chester. But that's what he would do. And then like the next tour, you know, so it's like he has the Roxy Band and that falls apart. So he does a short tour with Captain Beefheart. George Duke's still in the band. Terry Bozzio is playing drums now. And then the next tour after that, so that was like a spring. And then the fall tour is like a four-piece band. It's like Eddie Jobson, you know.
But that's kind of...
But that's what he did.
Yeah.
You know?
And his music generally reflected that movement.
Right.
Of, I'm not getting pigeonholed or anything.
I'm
still going to be irreverent, and I'm going to do my thing. But I'm... players are going to...
That's what... People would come, people would go, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, and it's so funny, though, because, you know, you look at this and you're like, man, he could be such a dick, you know? He really could. But they all even, you know, they may
the
say
reverence.
Stuff, and, but at the end they're like, you know, but it was great, and he was always great. And you know, because the Steve Vai stories are, there's so many out there, and I love his audition story, because Steve Vai started transcribing for Zappa, I think in like 79, he's like, oh, I want to audition for the band and this and that. And Zappa's like, well, how old are you? And he's like, 18. He's like, no way, you know? So anyways, he did audition a couple of years later. And he talks about how, you know, Frank told him all these tunes. He got there to the rehearsal hall. None of those songs are the ones he wanted. And Frank was like, play this, play it in 7/8, 7/8 reggae, do this. And then he had him play something. And Steve was like, it's impossible. Nobody could play that, like, not just him, but nobody could play that note. So he goes, I'm sorry, I can't play that. And Frank goes, well, I hear Linda Ronstadt's looking for a guitar. and Steve I goes, and that, it was just like that. And then at the end, Steve I says, you know, I went up, I said, thanks, Frank, you know, thanks for, you know, sorry. And Frank's like, you're in the band. And Steve I goes, so I hugged him. And
which you don't do.
Which you don't do. But which is funny, because you hear that too, like later on in the movie when Ruth Underwood's talking about how she, you know, he was right at the end of his life and she wanted to bring him a letter, and she expected, she's like, don't read the letter till I leave. And of course she goes, and of course he read it. And, you know, and she said, she goes, well, he's not very effusive, but he said it was very nice and he gave me a hug. And then she kind of breaks down on camera. But, you know, it's funny that, and then, you know, his daughter's got a book out now and it's more her mother, which I can kind of see. I mean, and they say it in the video too, which blows my mind, because Gail says it. Frank told me to sell everything and get out of it, and she didn't. And that's really where all the family trouble started, because they kind of split in the middle. And she should have done it. She should have sold. I mean,
she's
passed
about
on
it
now, but you know, that created a lot of problems.
Angst.
Well, because she gave essentially gave the management of the legacy to two of the kids, and not Dweezil and Moon, and it was just this whole big thing. And they started giving Dweezil issues for touring.
Zappa.
And he had a few tours where it was like, you know, he was calling it something different, and man, he was pissed, which I understand. He's like, it's my dad's legacy, not this, you know. But at the end of the day, the music still lives on. And you know, I was lucky. I saw Zappa twice. So he toured in 81, 82, then 84, and then his last tour was 88 with horns.
Okay.
And I think that one was...
Which, when did you see him?
I saw him in...
You said you saw him twice, and you just named like eight
I
years.
I know, he toured. I saw him in 1982. I believe it might have been New Haven Coliseum.
Okay.
And I saw him in 84 at University of Massachusetts, because I went to school there. And that was funny, because it was like... It was either before...
Which was Valley Girl, 82?
Valley Girl was 81, I think. 81,
okay.
Yeah. And, but when I saw him in 82, oh, that was an amazing show. But I came back to college. I knew he was playing. I think I'd broken up with a girlfriend. I went to the box office and said, any tickets left? They said, well, we have single seats. They go, we have a single seat, but it's in the front row. I was like, cool. So I sat right in the center front row alone. I mean, obviously people around me, and saw Zappa. And it was a good show. Actually, they've released part of that show, because one of the famous jazz saxophone player at the time, Archie Shepp, who's passed on, came on stage and played with them. And so that was amazing. But it was a great show. So I saw him more in the times where it was, you know, the band and Zappa. But the music was, the players were just...
It was insane.
It was completely insane. And the music, too. But I could go on for Zappa for a long time. I'm a big fan. And personally, and I recommend, there's so much material that they put out of things that were there before. So it's like...
So where does one start?
I think you start with the popular. Like, I personally... I like Apostrophe. I think it's a great album. And that's got, you know, Don't Eat the Yellow Snow and all that. But there's also Apostrophe, which is the tune he did with Jack Bruce.
Yeah.
But on the box sets, there's live shows and extra stuff. I would still recommend, if you're just kind of familiar with Zappa, like, what should I listen to, particularly from a prog band, just go right to the Roxy, the Complete Roxy. Roxy and Elsewhere was the album, but now the Complete Roxy is out, and that would be the thing to go to
live.
Me, because that's the live, because live is where it's at. And I mean, you know, you get, again, you get Chester, you get George Duke, you get Ruth Underwood, Napoleon Murphy Brock, and that's another one where, you know, he goes to a club, sees a guy playing cover tunes, but like has the audience in sand. He's like, you know, you want to come play with me? And he's like, who are you? Because he was like an R&B guy. And he said, and he's like, well, who else plays with you? And he goes, well, he mentioned George Duke and John McPonty, and that was all I needed to hear, you know? but yeah, Roxy and Elsewhere, the box set. But any of those 70s things, I think is good. And then just kind of branch out. I mean, you know, if you're into jazz, the Grand Wazoo 72 Hours Now box set with live stuff. So whatever you're, if you're interested in this classical stuff, that's all box sets now too. Yeah. So they are continually.
But start with the Roxy.
I would start with the Roxy. Right. If you can't get into that, you're not going to get into Zappa because it's just really intense music. But leave comments. I mean, I'd love to hear what era people think and if we're off base, right? Like, you know, I mean, he had a lot of fans in that Shakir Baby era and the Joe's Garage era. And, you know, the Halloween show. I mean, there's just so much famous stuff around him. And I'll tell one little story because you know, well, this is, no, this is more... This is, remember Brass City.
Oh, sure.
And Walt, Brass City Records, I'm sure people out there, there's a famous record store, and the owner,
in
Walt.
In Waterbury.
Yeah, in Waterbury, Connecticut. Walt was a huge Zappa guy. And so the day Zappa died, I was like, I'm going to go up to Brass City. So I went up there, and, you know, I stayed there a few hours, and I go in, and he goes, I pulled all the Zappa stuff. Because he goes, people are calling me, you got any Zappa? And he's like, you know, none of these people wanted to buy Zappa before, now he dies. And he's like, I'm not selling any Zappa for like 3 months. And he didn't, you know?
Yeah.
He didn't. But we talked about Zappa, and listen, unfortunately, Walt had passed on too. Just a great record store, but you don't have that anymore either. Like, you can go to a record store and talk. Like, Zappa died. I'm like, what was the first thing I thought of? I'm going to talk to Walt because I knew how much he was into him. And it was like, you know, could share kind of the grief. Because that was, to me, that was the first kind of like, I mean, like I said, well, we were younger, so 52 seemed different. But now I look back and it's like, man, everything that guy accomplished, God, what a freaking loser I am.
That's crazy.
Having said that, though, because you see, I mean, he had a clear head about him. He's like, he could never get. He could never.
Yeah, but in.
It's of its time.
He just had.
It's of its time.
Yeah, he was a driven man.
Yeah, so.
All right.
There you go, Frank Zappa. Again, any comments, please leave them. I'm always curious about what eras people are into. And if you saw any of those great eras, there's a story, I forget, some guy told a story online. It's like Frank Zappa's eyes always lit up. Like somebody would say, oh, I saw the Mothers here, or saw this, and he wouldn't really have a response. But if you say, oh, I was at one of the Roxy shows, and he'd be like, really? What'd you think? Like, that held some place in his, and it is. It's like a pinnacle. So, so there you go. Prague will find a way.
Even with Frank Zappa.
Especially with Frank Zappa.
If you wanted to.